Welcome to Live Boldly with Sarah, a guide through trauma, personal healing, growth, and discovery leading to the ultimate life of joy, mental wellness, and less fear. As a single mother, certified coach in transitional change, and adventurer, I will share my personal traumas and help you with steps to be free of whatever internal or external chains are keeping you from enjoying this life. My guests and I go beyond the typical conversation as they share their inspirational journeys, and every other week, I bring you my solo episodes where I highlight issues or ahas that I know you are going through too. From relationships, aspirations that have seemed impossible, motherhood, friendships, work, transitions, inertia, depression, my wish is this forum can help you through all of this and more. My mission is to create a supportive community and connection that empowers each one of you to love yourself and believe your right to live boldly. Hey everyone, welcome to another episode of Live Boldly with Sarah. Today I have on a really special guest. I'm excited about this. Betsy Aaron is joining us. And this conversation, I have a feeling, is going to need tissues for many reasons. So perhaps I would suggest you all go get them and also grab your journal and make sure that you take notes on this beautiful, lovely conversation with this incredible woman today. So Betsy, I want to thank you, first of all, for being here and sharing your beautiful, vulnerable, amazing story with these listeners, because I interview a lot of people. I've had the privilege and the honor of interviewing a lot of people, and it's people's most vulnerable, authentic, true, like uplifting and honest conversations with just humans that are doing extraordinary things in their ordinary-ish lives, even though I don't think any of us has an ordinary life. And you're one of them. So thank you for being here.
Well, I'm so excited to be here. It's really a privilege to be able to have a chat with you. So thank you.
Thank you. Tell us a little bit about you and your story and give the listeners some detail into who you are and why you are here.
Okay, so I just want to say my cancer story is not my whole story.
Exactly. You
know, I really, it's just what I'm experiencing right now. I have ROCKA1, which is an inherited breast cancer gene. Anyone who's an Ashkenazi Jew will know what I'm talking about because it's not uncommon. And I will also say that cancer is not uncommon. 1 in 2 people now live with it. So that's half of the world. And I had cancer previously, 20 years ago. I had ovarian cancer, and I never had a recurrence in 20 years. So I thought, I'm good. And last time, every time I think I'm good, that's when the shoe falls. And that's what happened 20 years ago. So I was diagnosed 1.5 years ago. I was having a long distance romance, which I knew was fated to not last. And I started getting stomach aches. I thought from this relationship, like this relationship is making me sick, but wasn't the relationship, it was cancer. Although maybe it was the relationship a little bit too. So I was diagnosed with stage 4 metastatic gastric adenocarcinoma, which is a big long name for stomach cancer. It's relatively rare. It doesn't get a lot of research. It's very, very aggressive. So it takes a lot of effort and energy to manage. I'm doing well, but I will say at this point, the treatment is very difficult. It's working. So I have radically less cancer than I did 1.5 years ago. But next week, I'll be having my 40th round of chemo. I have it every other week. It takes a week to recover. So I have just a small window to like do my non-cancer life, you know, after I've come out of what I call the chemo tunnel. So when I was diagnosed, you know, it's a pretty overwhelming thing. And my assignment to myself was, how am I going to live with this? I got over the overwhelming part. The way I've navigated through my own life is to follow my own path, to follow my nose. So I work on a team, you know, with my oncologist, but I view myself as the leader and the expert because I live in my body and that's where the cancer is. Recently, I just really wanted a creative project, and I came up with one that my intention was twofold. I wanted to be seen and heard so I can share with other people who live with cancer some of the answers I came up with for myself to the question of how to live with cancer, things your doctors don't tell you, things that I have found that work for me that I just wanted people to know about. And then secondly, I wanted to be seen and heard by the healthcare industry because they need to do a much better job. And as a writer, my particular concern is with the language they use. The language they use for patients living with cancer is the same language they used for people who had AIDS. It's the same language they used with people who had TB in the 19th century. So the language has not changed since the 19th century. And it's all about killing, doing battle, fighting, all violent, aggressive metaphors, which, in my view, A, don't help the patient at all who's already stressed enough. That kind of language puts you into a like a hypervigilant state. And that is not what you want. You want to cultivate inner peace so that you can direct your energy towards healing. So that's the first thing. The second thing is this language, at the end of the day, puts the blame on the patient because if the patient loses the battle, it's because they didn't fight hard enough. And that's just BS. It's 200-year-old BS. It's really not true. It's just because they don't have a cure. As soon as there's a cure for chronic disease, the language changes. So I came up with this project. I wrote and produced 20 episodes of a video series called A Pacifist Guide to Living with Cancer. And I am a pacifist, which doesn't mean that I'm at all passive, but I came to this during the time where the war, there's so many wars in the world. And I was just like, no, that is not the answer. No one has a right to kill anyone else, in my view. The only answer is peace. And that's, I think, the only answer internally is inner peace, and how you manage that. So I gab a lot about that in my video. I have a lot to say about it. But I really want people to. They don't have to accept the received wisdom of this language of being a warrior. Why put that on yourself when you already have so much to deal with? Being a warrior is a really hard job, and living with cancer is a hard job. Like, that's enough. Just managing your energy so that you can heal is, that's a full-time job. So, that was my intention.
I have
Yeah.
so many questions and
Ask.
so many. So I have so much that I want to unpack and dive in with you. One
Sure.
of them being exactly what you're talking about, which is around that language of how do we. Here's the thing that I was just having this conversation with yesterday, actually, with one of my clients about relationships. And she's like, I need to get over this. I need to get over this. I need to get over this. And I said to her, the more that you're fighting, the more that it's actually overtaking everything, your thoughts, your feelings, your emotions, your body, all of it. And I invited her into, what about if you do this a different way? What about in place of this fighting, exactly what you're talking about as well, this languaging around it, what about if you deal with this, like create love around it, create some peace around it, create some more managed emotions around it in place of this thought that you have to fight it in order for it to go away. Right. And so what I'm hearing from you is very similar to that. It's not this because there's so much energy that goes into the fight. And when you
Exactly.
There's so
Exactly.
much energy. It's like and I told her that. I said, the more that you are using your energy to fight, the more that you're feeling. It's almost like you're feeding this train that just you can't seem to get off of. So is that
Right.
what I'm hearing from you?
Yeah. Your client is already feeling terrible. She's
Right.
feeling hurt. And that fighting is it depletes your energy. It doesn't help you at all. And what you said earlier really resonated with me because I think the most powerful way to be in the world is to be vulnerable, to be honest and to be present. And if you're caught up with this constant, monkey mind of like must fight, must fight, must fight, you're just not being present in your own life. You're kind of missing a lot of good stuff because you're focused on like, how can I not have my feelings? Like, why wouldn't we want to have your feelings? I think it's a good thing, but I do get that that's frightening for some people. I think fear is a really good thing. I think it's kind of a primitive response. I'm not a neuroscientist. I don't know if it's in the amygdala or where it is, but that primitive fight or flight thing, like we need to get out of the way of that. And like it took me a long time to come to my practice as a writer. And now I know that if I'm feeling scared, I'm onto something really good, I have never written or put something out in the world that started from a place of fear that had any bad consequences. So for me, fear is like a really good signal to take an action, And I do get that that can be frightening if you don't live that way, but
So if you're not a, are you typically a fearful or fear-based, have you ever been that way?
I think maybe when I was younger, I'm a deep introvert, and so I think maybe withdrawing from situations made me feel safe. But I would say as an adult, absolutely not. I've never had a traditional career trajectory. I've always followed my own way, and I feel pretty fierce about that. I feel like to not listen to that inner voice and like follow your own path and follow your nose, as I call it, is like you're doing yourself a disservice.
Do you mind if I just go straight in and ask you some very vulnerable questions?
Yeah, go for
I want
it.
to make sure I'm okay with stepping into those spaces. Are you a happy human?
I am a happy human.
That's what I'm gathering.
I am a happy human. I really like the word exuberance. And that comes from energy. Like today my energy is good. So yeah, I feel exuberant. It's a sunny, beautiful day, and I'm happy. I have had deep pain in my life and terrible things happening, and that's life. That happens to everybody. But I think it's how you process these things. I accept the reality of my life, and it's really been an adventure, and it's mine. I created it, and I embrace that. I wouldn't have it any other way. And honestly, I've had one or two corporate jobs in my life, and I never lasted very long. I'm an independent person. It's not that I'm not collaborative, but I do really listen to my own intuition. And that makes me happy. I dance in the kitchen. That makes me happy. I live with a dog. That makes me happy. Happiness. So that I mentioned this new Buddhist practice that I have, this meditation practice, and what I'm doing is called modern Buddhism, and it's framed as medicine. And the monk who leads the meditation says, our only job is to be happy and to have inner peace. I really embrace the simplicity of that. That just makes so much sense to me. And perhaps when I was younger, I was like, boo, 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 gotta do this, gotta do that, gotta shut this out, gotta leave this. What's next? But I think with age, I've just, and especially living with cancer, it's a one day at a time deal. And when I have days when I'm not happy, they're infrequent, but they frighten me because it's not what I want, and what can I do about it? And sometimes it's just ignited by chemo and it just has to pass. And the body is so resilient, it does pass and then I'm happy again. So I've really, my life is radically simpler than it used to be. I think because this illness is a full-time job. And I think maybe happiness is a choice. What do you think? I don't know.
I agree with you. I think I 100%. It's funny because I was talking to a friend earlier today who he's in a relationship that isn't overly happy. And I said, this is a choice. You can choose to step out and get into a relationship if you foresee or want to down the road within one that is happy. Like, this is a choice. And I love the fact that you have had so many, two bouts of cancer, and you choose happiness. Like, that is the most beautiful thing.
It's imperative. Like, this is my life now. The chemo that I get is considered palliative, and I'll be on it forever unless a cure is found or some new drugs are found or a clinical trial. So how do I want to live my life? How do I want to live with cancer? Am I going to be scared and miserable and that's my life?
Yeah.
Yeah.
How was it for you getting that diagnosis? I want to go back, if you don't mind, to that day, because there are so many people in this world that
Yeah.
don't expect something to either be handed to them like that, or they go through a really hard time. I've done it myself. I've lived through some really difficult times that just came out of the blue, completely unexpected. How was that for you getting that diagnosis?
It was overwhelming. I hope this isn't too technical, but the way I was diagnosed was, so I thought this boyfriend was giving me stomach aches, and so I was taking probiotics. I went on a plant-based diet, nothing worked. So I thought, I'm gonna have a colonoscopy. And that prep the night before, I started throwing up blood. So I called up the ER and I had an endoscopy instead of a colonoscopy. And they found a large tumor just below my esophagus. And I was really shell-shocked. That's the best way to put it. I was so overwhelmed. And they're very matter-of-fact about it. They said, well, you have BRCA1, it's a no-brainer. My second response after being overwhelmed was I was angry. And I was angry the first time around too. This time I was angry because, well, the first time I was angry at my ancestors, the tribe, for never marrying outside of the tribe. This time around, I was angry that nothing has changed in 20 years. They were going to give me the same drugs they gave me 20 years ago. And I was furious. I was furious at healthcare because I'm like, what? What? And I immediately, they said the BRCA1 is kind of a good thing. Because the platinum-based drugs work really well with BRCA1. There are many different genetic causes for stomach cancer, and they're like, oh, this is a good one. And I'm like, what? I don't see anything good about it. And I'm not going back on those platinum-based drugs because they were heinous and I couldn't handle them. And I'm 20 years older now. So you better come up with something else. So I think that I was overwhelmed for a while, but I also was so sick. I lost 30 pounds, so I weighed like 87 pounds, and I
Gosh.
was actively dying. I was very close to death. I see now. So I was just functioning, is the best way to put it. I was not in a good place, and that went on for a couple of months, and then the chemo started to work, and I felt so encouraged by that, and then I got to work, kind of taking charge of things. I know I sound like such a bossy pants, but you have to advocate for yourself or you don't get heard. The doctors are so overburdened. They don't have very much time. And a lot of doctors, not mine, but when they hear stage 4, their attitude is, well, you're going to die anyway. So I'm not going to give you a lot of time and attention because it's not a good use of my time. So I immediately started doing all the research, asking questions, and really, you could not ignore me. So that's like a long-winded answer to your question.
No, it's beautiful. So what was the prognosis they gave you?
Stage four, metastatic, and it spread. I had a pulmonary embolism. I had a clot in my lung. I had
Oh
to go to
my
the hospital.
gosh.
Yeah, it was in my liver, my spleen, my bones. It's like a web. It will just take over. It's very opportunistic. But as I said, that was a year and a half ago, and the big tumor they found on day one is completely gone now. All the big ones are gone. Everything is either disappeared or sh shrunken, as far as they can tell. And so, I've been able to maintain that. I've been quote unquote stable for about 6 months, and the chemo is working. I have. Really, I'm not good with numbers, but I probably have 95% less cancer than I did when I started. So I feel better,
Yeah.
and my ailments are really related to the treatment now and the buildup of toxicity. And, so I'm pretty, now I take a week off every 3 months. I just came back from a week in Mexico. I was up hiking every morning and I felt fantastic because the body is so resilient. And I was in a healing environment, and I had a week off from chemo. And, so I wasn't a person living with cancer. I was like a person in Mexico hiking, and it was really good. And then when I cancer, when I chemo last week, it was way better because I had gotten rid of most of the toxicity.
Wow. How do you live? This is my one of my questions that I've asked one of my dearest friends as well, who's had cancer. How do you wake up every day? And I'm just going to go straight to the question, like I did with her. And how do you live without the worry? Or do you have the worry? Is it just like
I
it's
don't have to worry.
you don't have the worry? Okay. How is it that you don't have the worry? And so many people in this world do. Like, what are you doing to adjust and to literally choose happiness every day?
A couple of things. One is I accept the reality that this is my life. It's not. This is it. This is my life. I also accept the reality of death. Like, we start to die the second we're born, and that freaks people out. But I accept that. It's possible that my timeline has moved up. I mean, nobody knows when they're going to die, but I know that this impacts my longevity, and I accept that, and I'm fine with it. So, I live with it. I live with it, honestly. It's in my body. I live with it. I don't run from it. I deal with it. This is what got me to Mexico. It's the only time this ever happened to me. The chemo was such an ass kicking. I hope that's okay to
Of
say.
course.
I went to a scary, dark place for the first time in my life, which was, I don't think I can do this. And if I can't do it, I'm going to die in like 6 or 7 weeks. So I got to figure out something. So that's what I came up with, like, go to Mexico and go hiking for a week. And it was the right thing. So, you have to, like, it's an interior process. You have to listen to your body. And you also have to have confidence and know that I know that I'm doing what I can. And that's really it.
Well, the reason I'm just like dumbfounded is because you also just said something. I accept that this is the reality of my life.
Yeah.
And that is acceptance is to me the key to so much greatness in this world. And then you just said you decide, okay, well, if I don't change my thoughts, if I don't change the way that I'm actually looking at this, then what's going to happen on the other side of it? And I don't know if you know anything about neuroplasticity with the brain. Do you know anything about this?
A little tiny bit, yeah.
Okay. Well, let's kind of like step into this for a second. I actually talk about this in my speech, is that we have the ability to change the way that we are actually the way that the brain processes and the way that we are looking at things, right? Like our brain. We have these neuroplasticity, which is where different parts of our brain, we create new connections, right? New neural pathways through our thoughts, right? The way to do that is actually to stand on the edge of anything and to see things differently, gain a new perspective, have new learning, put ourselves into new environments, which is what's really interesting that you didn't even realize that's what exactly what you were doing. And our brains can literally reorganize the way that we are processing and looking at things, which is the way that we are, for you, for example, looking at your life from, look, if I don't change this, I'm going to actually die versus live, right? And so you going to Mexico is what created these new neural pathways in your brain and the way that you are actually looking at things.
Are you looking to bring a little more happiness into your life or want to learn how to step outside your comfort zone? Guess what? Our digital downloadable programs are only $39 just for a limited time. Go grab Unstuck and Free, How to Live Outside Your Comfort Zone, filmed in the mountains of Southern California, Mount Baldy to be exact, my favorite mountain, or go grab 7 Steps to Happiness. This is filmed on the High Sierra Loop in Yosemite National Park. Incredible, incredible visuals. These programs will take you to that next step and rise you into living your best life. Use the coupon code LIVEBOLDLY at checkout, LIVEBOLDLY. Go grab them, sarahshultoncranz.com, underneath more and digital programs.
I find it amazing and one of the biggest gifts that you are here, because hopefully this is going to give people a new perspective and the way that they view their own life and create new neural pathways and thoughts within their brain and how they can actually view things, which is, I accept the reality of my life. Like, you're accepting the reality of where you're at.
Yeah. And that, you know, what you were just talking about really relates to meditation. Like, you can train your mind. You can step out of your mind and observe it. You can change your mind. And your mind is a body part that lives in the body, and they speak to each other. So if you have these negative thoughts, you know, that's in your body. I have a quick digression with I hope it's going to be an interesting story. I'll tell it quickly. But the first time I had cancer, so my older sister died young of cancer. It hits all the women in my family, but it's passed through the men. That's just the way it's been. So she died young, and when I was young, and it was always in the background, like, it's going to happen to me, it's going to happen to me. And so I didn't, as a younger person, I never had a sense of my future self, because I didn't think I would have a future. So I did a lot of wild and crazy things because I didn't think it would have consequences. And then when I hit 45, I thought, oh, I'm going to live. So I went to art school and got my MFA. I went to India. I did all these things. But what I left out was I went to graduate school as a writer at an art school. I know that's weird, but that's what I did. And all the stories I was writing were about death and dying and tumors that talked, and really, not the second, but really right after I graduated, I was diagnosed with cancer, with ovarian cancer. So my body knew the entire time, and it was coming out in my writing, but my mind would not go there.
Wow.
And that's how I know this, because I had that experience.
Wow.
Yeah. And when I cancer the first time, I never went to a dark place. I just was like, you know, I got this.
Wow. So it's almost like your writing was foreshadowing.
Yeah.
It's also going to be happening.
Yeah. And so I now see my writing as a meditative process. If I will get out of the way and let the material present itself instead of me over-determining it, you know, I'm gonna learn something, like, whoa, you know, where'd that come from? You know, my body was telling me it was right in front of my nose the whole time. So
I do think that we have this foreshadowing that can happen also within our dreams, within, I've had it.
One of the ways I take care of myself is I sleep 12 hours a night, because I think that's when a lot of healing can happen. We sort of get out of the way and our body can work on healing. And so I take a TC tincture. I've been doing it for a year and a half. I have a medical marijuana card, and my dog and I are both out for 12 hours. So I haven't really been noticing my dreams until they changed. And I think I'm just reviewing the men of the past for some reason.
Your love.
Yeah, well, these were all things that didn't work out, and I'm looking at them, and yeah, my love. And this point in my life, I'm 70 now, and I feel so free. Like, I'm free of my family. I'm free of these relationships that didn't work out. I'm on my own, and sometimes, I have a lot of support, but sometimes I'm like, I'm on my own, but most of the time I'm like fine with it, But I will confess to like I do have some loneliness, and I think, aren't there any men who would really want someone who's 70 and has stage four cancer? It's kind of unlikely, but I try to just, when I walk my dog, I concentrate on having an open heart, and I tell myself, I love and I'm loved, and I just say that over and over again. It's not going to bring in anything bad into my life, so.
Here's the thing though, like you're such a beautiful soul. You are, you would, of course, somebody would want to be in a relationship with someone like you. Like you're such a beautiful soul. You bring so, I mean, we sat down with this conversation and I wanted to start to cry just because I was like, when you just know good people are in front of you, like I can tell that there's really good people when a good person is in front of me and you are a really, really good person.
You as well. I feel that way too,
Thank you. When you are this work that you are putting into the world, what is it that you are hoping to accomplish? What is it that you're working towards?
I want to be seen and heard. I want healthcare to change, and I want to help people. I belong to a lot of online support groups, and people are terrified, and that some people refuse treatment because they're too terrified to even get the treatment, and everybody's different. I'm also like a nosy, eavesdropping kind of person. So when I'm getting chemo, I'm in a bay with the curtains closed, but I'm listening to all the other conversations. And it sounds judgy, but I just hear so much passivity and so much, I'm not going to do anything, and that makes me kind of mad. It does, because you're determining your own fate when you make those choices to not accept your reality and work on your healing and be seen and be heard. That's what we're here for. Well, we're here to be happy. We're here to be happy. But yeah, I want to normalize the conversation with so many people that have cancer. It's a common thing now. It just needs to be talked about. And death and dying needs to be talked about too. It shouldn't be some taboo.
I agree. I 100% agree with you. I think that death and dying is one of those things that everybody avoids the conversation because if we avoid it, it's like psychological avoidance. If we avoid it, it's just not going to happen. We're so afraid of the change that comes with it because we look at it like it's some big problem to be had when guess what? We're all going to die. There isn't anybody out there that's not going to die.
Exactly. And I'm fine with that. I really am. I'm at peace with that.
Have you always been at peace with that, with death?
I don't think so. That's such a great question.
Do you know what I'm most afraid of?
No.
It's interesting. I'm not afraid of a lot. You don't really know me that way, but I'm really not afraid of a lot. The thing that I am most afraid of is not living.
Exactly.
And
That's
yeah,
so scary.
I'm not afraid of death. Like, death is going to happen to me. And
That's right.
I told my kids, I'm like, look, when I die, cry your tears quick because,
Great.
right? Like, cry your tears quick and really laugh so much because I have enjoyed my life. There's been parts of it that have been really hard. And on the other side of that, there's been so much good. So there's something that Dr. Edith Eger always says, and I talk about this a lot, which is
She's a Holocaust survivor. And she talks about how we all walk through the valley of death and darkness at some point, but don't set up camp there. And so hard times are going to happen. Don't stop in them. Don't sit in them. More importantly, though, don't forget to live.
Yeah, I constantly ask myself, is this a good use of my time? And now I say, is this a good use of my energy? Because I really think that generating energy, conserving energy, and directing it towards my healing, that's, you know, that's my job right now. And the other thing I want to say, I'm loving this conversation so much, I don't want it to ever end.
I love you.
Back at you. But fear, I really think, is imagination. It's not, do you know, it's like,
yeah,
you,
I 100% agree with you.
Yeah. So maybe it's important to listen to that, as, but it's important to not let it stop you ever, ever. Well,
there's something that you said earlier that also struck me, which was when you're afraid, you know, you're onto something.
Yeah.
And I have that same thing. I mean, I'm right now working on this new speaking engagement that I'm super freaking stoked about. I'm so excited about it. And I know that it's also going to cause me a little bit of fear when I'm up there delivering it for the first, the second, the third time. How are people going to take it in? Is it going to, you know, are people going to react to it? What's the part that's going to strike them? And I think that through that journey of fear, we also have this incredible opportunity to create so much impact. You, if you're not a little bit afraid, then to me, it's kind of like when you're not pissing a few people off, you're not doing it right. Because there's like, it's just the way it is, you know, like there's, if you're not feeling a little bit of out of your comfort zone, then there's something that you're not pushing yourself enough towards, or you're not guiding yourself enough towards.
Maybe that is your comfort zone.
Mm-hmm.
Instead of out of your comfort zone, that is your comfort zone, and you're willing to be vulnerable and present and offer your genius to the world, you know?
Right.
So if that gets a little bit of adrenaline going, that's fine.
Yeah. You know? There's a really good thing that I've started to use. I can thank my mom for this one. We had a conversation during COVID, and it was all about life and death. And my mom and I used to have many, many deep conversations about that. And one of the things that I now ask myself when I am making a decision, if I'm up against a problem, if I'm, you know, having one of those days, it's, I ask, what would my 108-year-old self say to me at this moment? Because I feel like I'm going to live to 108. Take it or leave it. I tell my kids that. They're like, wow, that's a long time. I always ask, okay, what would she say to me? What advice would she give? Most importantly, would she be proud of how I'm living this moment? And I think that that's something to really reflect on when it comes to what are you afraid of? For me, it's I'm afraid of not living, right? Like during this time that I'm here. Does that resonate with you?
It does resonate with me. I mean, I don't have kids, which is, you know, it's a whole nother thing. It's a whole nother thing. I'm just really enjoying being free at this point in my life. You know, I've made a lot of mistakes. I've done all kinds of things, but, you know, yeah, it's what we were talking about earlier in the conversation. It's just our job is to be happy. Mm-hmm. And if you're not happy, that's a terrible thing. You know, it's your life. It's your life. If you're not present, that's a terrible thing because that's your life too. You know, this time goes by that you're not going to get back, and really wake up. Everybody needs to wake up, you know, and maybe it's easier when you're older. I think, you know, I have some perspective now, and I don't know if I answered your question, but it just made me think, you know, I probably didn't have kids because I didn't want them to have cancer. You know, I see that now. And what I said earlier in the story, when I graduated from, you know, got my MFA, my next thing to check off was I was going to adopt a baby as a single, you know, I was going to go to Kazakhstan in 6 months, and I had to get a physical, and that's when they told me, you have cancer, you're not going anywhere. So
Wow.
Yeah. And that baby saved my life, you know? So I know I've gone off on a tangent, but I do think having children gives you a perspective on what example you're going to give them, you know, for how to live. Because that's really my question is how to live with this illness, but the big question is really just how to live, you know, period.
Period.
Yeah, I think it's something we should ask ourselves, or I should have asked myself much earlier in my life. I think earlier in my life, I was just like, I don't want to be like my mother. I don't want to be like my father. I'm not going to do this. I'm not going to do that. It was really reactive and rebellious rather than choosing.
That's actually one of the questions I was going to ask you as we end this conversation is if you were sitting down and having a conversation with yourself throughout your life up until this point, what would you say to her? And you started that conversation.
So I might cry answering it, but I think it's really just to be loving. I wish that I had been more loving to myself. That makes sense. You know, there's a lot of striving, and as I said, a lot of rebellion and reactivity. And I don't think I was loving enough towards myself, you know, and that has changed for me, but it wasn't modeled for me. I don't think I knew how to. I didn't even know what that was, you know. So I do regret that.
What do you do now to love yourself?
I really try to show up every day and greet the day and enjoy the day and just really simple pleasures. I try and get some things done, you know, in terms of taking care of myself. I try not to let this illness be my whole life. I'm still myself, you know. I just have an illness, but I'm still myself. I still have a sense of humor. I still curse a lot, you know. I like to have fun. Those things are really, really important. I just really don't, this doesn't define me. I talk about this in one of my videos, like, don't be a statistic, you know. And in my case, the statistics are not good, but they're not who I am. So, I don't know if I've answered your question, but I'm true myself, you know, and I think that is a big act of loving. I'm honest with myself. I do good things for myself. I take care of myself. I try to be good to others, you know. I'm a pacifist. That is a loving thing, you know. I want everybody to live and to be happy.
That was going to be my next question was if you had a stage to give one message to the world, what would it be?
I wouldn't be allowed to say this, but I would say, don't fuck this up. You
Love
only
you.
get one shot at this.
Don't
Stop
talk.
giving yourself fairy tales. Stop lying to yourself. Stop lying to others. Show up in your life. Show up and live it. Be present. Be vulnerable. Be honest. All the rest is, it's just a waste of time, you know, and the time is precious. Yeah. I really can't tolerate any form of BS at this point in my life. You know, I don't know if it's a good thing, but I just can't tolerate it.
I am right there with you, but I love you go from I accept the reality of my life to don't fuck this up.
Well, it's very easy to do, and you watch other people do it, and you can't save them for themselves. Well, you can maybe in your work, you know, but I.
No, nobody can save anybody. Are you kidding me? Like everybody, I don't care who you are. Here's the deal. You could have cancer and you could have a absolute 100% like this is the way that we're going to go in order to heal you. And if that person in front of you doesn't want to heal, they're not going to heal. Like nobody has the power to save anybody. You have to be able to save yourself.
Yeah.
The human body, mind, spirit, thought, like all of it together, you can take yourself down like that. It just, you know what I'm saying? Like
I do.
I can't do that for anybody. And so, and where that came from was me continuously telling my therapist that I had when I was going through everything in 2013. And when I came out of it and was on the other side, I said to her, "Dorit, you saved my life." And I would say that to her so many times. And she's like, "Stop saying that. I didn't do it. I gave you the tools. You picked them up. You took care of it. You did it yourself." And it took me a while because I wanted to hand credit over. And I'm like, wait a second here. Why the hell am I handing credit over when you're right? I saved me. I didn't have to accept the tools. You could have given them to me, but if I wasn't going to use them, I saved myself. You're exactly right. And so empowering yourself in that way is huge.
It took me a long time because it's not how I was raised. I was
me neither.
You know, I had low self-esteem. I made myself smaller so that other people wouldn't feel bad, you know, around me. And that is a gift of aging. You know, I'm free of all of that, you know, and it took me a very long time. I think things are so much better now, you know, than when I was growing up, you know, for women in particular.
But I was the same way. I'm 50 and I just turned 50 this last year. And I feel like I have finally been no, I'm not going to make myself small for anyone. If you don't like me and accept me as who I am, all of it, then you don't have to be around me. That's whatever. Like, that's not, I'm not going to change who I am. I am a lot and I love my lot. So, you know, that's the reason that I am the way that I am. But I did the same thing. I had very low self-esteem for a very long time and didn't feel worthy and felt like I couldn't be this person that I ultimately wanted to be. And I did play small for a very long time. And I feel like I'm finally stepping into playing big, which is really exciting.
I see that. You know, I've been following you on LinkedIn since we were introduced, and I know what you do. I see you in action, and it's amazing. And I love it.
Thank you. Exciting.
Yeah. And it's necessary, you know, it's important work. So I think that's great.
I just quickly,
you know, again, back to getting this MFA, I didn't start writing until I was 45. Because I was too scared, you know, I couldn't find my own voice. And when I went to college, women writers were not taught. We were trained to write like Hemingway or Fitzgerald, which really didn't work for me. So I just silenced myself. I worked in TV and I wrote for others. Mm-hmm. So it took me a really long time to get it together.
I think finding your voice is one of the, and I know we're way over time, but I don't care. I want to keep going if you're okay with that, just for a few more minutes. But I do think that finding your voice is one of the most exhausting, deep, amazing, beautiful, magical things that you can work on finding. And what I mean by that is in terms of your voice, it's your thoughts, how you want to be this human that you want to present into this world, that where you want to leave your legacy for who you are. Going into the speaking world now and shifting careers again, because I don't know, how many careers can I shift to? I don't know, because I just keep being called to them. I'm like, ooh, I want to do this. And I was really drawn to the stage. I want to take this message where I have been using and working within the canyon and deliver it on stage for corporations, organizations, businesses, women's groups, across the board. And I'll tell you, it rips you to shreds when you are diving in and finding your voice in a whole nother way. Mm-hmm. And it is, I'm finally there where I now know, and I'm so excited about it. Like, I'm so, 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 so excited about it. I was working with, before we jumped on, I was working with somebody who's been helping me with my messaging. And she sent me this text afterwards. And she's like, I am just so excited for you. You know, she goes, watching you go through this process over the last couple of months. For me, it's been 2 months of this super, super deep dive. But understanding it's taken years to get to that place. But, you know, once I actually got to that place and now have refined it over the last 2 months, it is freaking exciting and it is exhausting. And so for anyone that's at in that space of really finding your voice in whatever it is that you're doing, being however it is in your life, I promise you it is worth the work. It is so worth the work.
And it's powerful once you put your voice out there.
Yes.
And heard, it's a transaction.
Yes.
Amazing things, you already know this, but like amazing things happen. That's why we're having this conversation.
That's
amazing. Like I posted a video and I heard from you like 10 seconds later. I was like, whoa.
I was like, oh, I want you on my podcast. Like, I love this. Like, this is good stuff. Like, this is good stuff. Yeah, I'm so blessed and honored to have you here. And it's just been beautiful. It's been beautiful having this conversation. And it literally was a twisty, turny, beautiful navigating conversation.
I'm getting such good energy from you. And that's my meter. It's like, if you give me energy, we could go forever. If you take my energy, I'm out. You
know? I'm out. Peace. I'm the same way. I'm like, I am done with energy suckers. Peace out. You said something though earlier that I want to just come full circle to, which was what did you say? You said something like, you are the person navigating, or you are the person. Did you said something like that? No?
I wonder if it was in terms of my medical team. Like I regard myself as the expert. You know, I don't like kowtow to the oncologist. It's like collaborative, but I get the final say. And I'm the expert because I live with this and it's in my body and it's my life. You know, I think it's just hardwired in my DNA. If someone says, well, you have stage 4 and you're going to be dead in 5 years, I'm instantly like, I'll show you.
Hmm.
There's a curse word after it that starts with mother, you know, you'll have bleep, mother bleep, you know, I'll show you, you know, you don't dictate my anything. So is that?
Yes, I do believe so. And you just said something that I want to come full circle on one more time too, which is you listeners, those of you that are listening to this, you get the final say. Right. And I think that that's a really important thing for people to remember is that you do have the final say.
I love that. I have to take my hat off to that.
you are such a beautiful woman. You are such a freaking beautiful woman.
Thank you. And back at you.
Ah, I'm so blessed and honored to have had this conversation with you. Is there anything else that you would like to leave with the listeners? And then I also want to you to share, where can people watch these videos and please share them?
Well, thanks for this opportunity to have this amazing chat with you, which I'm going to be reliving, you know, for quite a while. The videos are called A Pacifist Guide to Living with Cancer. They're on YouTube and they're on Facebook, they're on LinkedIn, they're kind of like everywhere. And my name is Betsy Aaron, so they're pretty easy to find. I've dropped 11 so far. I've got like 9 more to go. And I'm thinking of like a season 2, which I want to talk about death. I want to talk about death and dying. I'm very excited about that. So maybe that's what's coming next. And I know it sounds weird that could be exciting, but I think it is.
I think it is too. Will you come back on and do another podcast episode about that?
Oh my God. I'd be
love that.
Thank you. I'd be honored to. Thank you. That's so sweet. And you know, I forgot that people were even listening to us. I just thought we were having this lovely chat. I never
supposed to be
went there in my mind.
You know what's so funny to me is that I get told that a lot by people who I interview. They're like, I forgot that we were even like, this was a podcast episode. It was just a conversation. And that's what I want it to be. I also want to share with the listeners that I've started doing this where I'm wanting all of you, the listeners, to ask the questions for this future episode. So if there is something that you are listening to right now, listeners, and you're like, oh, I want to know more about that, or I want her opinion or thoughts on this, or the questions that you might have about death yourself or living, how to, all of it. Send those questions to me, Sarah, at sarahschultenkranz.com, or throw them into you can send them an Instagram or a Facebook chat, whatever you want. Just find me, ask the questions, LinkedIn, go into my inbox and ask the question there. And we will answer these. Betsy and I will answer them at a later date.
An amazing gift, because that's really what I want. You know, I want to be able to help people, and, you know, I want to have a conversation.
Yeah.
So that would be so beyond.
So go watch the videos, share them with all of your people, my friends. Please, please, please. This is how we keep the ripple going. Share this podcast episode with your friends. Share it into your social media. You can tag Betsy, you can tag me. We will reshare. This is how we get the message out. I cannot stress that enough. I need every one of you, just like Betsy needs you as well. So please be a leader and ripple this into the world. So with that, thank you, Betsy, for being here.
Thank you.
You're amazing. Thank you. Absolutely amazing.
Got you. This was a wonderful, wonderful gift. Thank you so much.
Thank you. And to all the rest of you, thank you for being here and have a wonderful rest of your day as well.
Thank you for listening to the Live Boldly podcast. I hope you enjoyed this episode. I'm grateful to have you here. I believe in you, I believe in us, and always will. Life can get hard, but I promise you, on the other side, it's glorious. I'd love to invite you over to sarahschultenkranz.com to receive 5 free meditations recorded by me, or download your free guide on how nature is your perfect healing therapy. My site has many free resources to guide you on your life journey, many that I used myself while on my road from victim to thriver. And also, please, I ask that you share my podcast with those who may need inspiration, information, or who need to hear from others going through where they are right now. To grow this podcast, please leave an iTunes review and subscribe. Go find it on other platforms such as iHeartRadio, Google Play, Spotify, and Stitcher. Please also go to my Instagram or Facebook page, leave a message in my comments, and tell me what you think of this episode. Please share in your stories and tag me. I'd love to reshare and celebrate your healing journey. I love hearing from each one of you. Let's keep the ripple going. It begins with each one of us. I love you and have a great day.